I decided to open my presentation this morning with I Am Love, for love is a very powerful and transformative emotion. Love takes many forms, but the love that is the foundation of what we shall consider today is agape love. Agape is love based on principle, a selfless, sacrificial love, the highest of the four types of love that is found in the sacred scriptures. This Greek word agape and the variations of it are found throughout the New Testament and means love in an intensely spiritual sense, a true unconditional love. This love gives and expects nothing in return. Agape love perfectly describes the kind of love Jesus Christ had for his Father and for his followers. Whoever has my commands and keeps them is the one who loves me. The one who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I too will love them and show myself to them. John chapter 14, verse 21. So you might ask the question, what does agape love have to do with the topic of your sermon, the New Underground Railroad? Well, I would like to contrast briefly the system of mass incarceration in America as it exists today to the system of slavery that existed in previous centuries. I would like to compare the Underground Railroad, which was the vehicle for freedom for many slaves who were seeking it, to the new Underground Railroad, which we are attempting to construct here in this very church, in this city, and across the state and the nation. In times past, there was a select group of people who came to the conclusion that the institution of slavery was inhumane, unjust, reprehensible, and wrong in the eyes of God and all moral men and women. They were known as abolitionists, and as their writings and their speeches and their momentum grew, a system evolved which truly became the vehicle for a new path, a new life for slaves seeking freedom, and this was the Underground Railroad. You are very familiar with this, for the Unitarians have a long history of being involved in this freedom movement, and it is wonderfully commendable. Now remember that agape love of which we are speaking, this principle love, and the principle that is inherent here is the worth of a human life, the love of your fellow man, the belief that no person should be owned by another, that a human being is not property to be bought and sold, transported from place to place, worked from dusk till dawn, beaten, chained, isolated, and oppressed. It was this love that would give birth to the organizing of the Underground Railroad. It was this love that would fuel and power the abolitionist movement. It was this love that would be the foundation that led to the Civil War and emancipation for all Africans in America. Now, decades after the Civil War and the supposed emancipation, a new system evolved that would replace slavery. It came to be known as Jim Crow. Many of you are familiar with it. I'm certain that I saw books on the new Jim Crow in the other room, and I'm certain that many of you are reading it and having discussion groups. I've heard that these discussion groups were the foundation of the mass incarceration teaching and how I came to be standing here. This Jim Crow was slavery by another name. Jim Crow was the foundation of the mass incarceration system. Due to black codes which reincarcerated, formerly freed slaves, racist sharecropping practices, punitive court practices, loitering laws, the penitentiaries and the prison farms of the late 1800s and early 1900s became the foundation of mass incarceration. This system evolved to such an extent that I want you to consider this figure. In the census of 1860, there were 3,953,696 slaves in the upper, lower, and the border slave states. Today, in the system of mass incarceration, in state, federal, county prisons, and on probation and parole, there are 6,937,600 persons. That's almost twice as many people in the mass incarceration system today than there were slaves in 1960. That's an amazing figure, and a figure that not too many people would consider or even think possible. So we believe that this system, this mass incarceration, must be attacked on many levels. I was told by your minister when I first came in this morning that this podium was graced by the Dr. Martin Luther King. This is the seat where he sat. I am truly honored to be standing at a podium where he spoke and sitting in a chair where he sat. And I tell you the truth, if Martin Luther King was alive today, he would be attacking the system of mass incarceration. It is truly a singular issue of our times. Now, mass incarceration is far more than just the physical restraining of individuals in prison. That's just the one aspect of it. It's the lack of opportunity in urban areas. It is the manufacturing jobs being sent overseas. It's the flooding of guns and drugs in the black neighborhoods. It is closing schools while building prisons. It's racial profiling and racist laws, prosecutorial misconduct and mandatory minimums. It is life without parole, which is truly death by incarceration. All of these elements are combined and they create the prison industrial complex. Breaking down a few of these briefly, if you ride through North Philadelphia, you see what I call ghost factories. There are many factories that were thriving, bustling places of business decades ago. Now they're ghost factories. Windows broken out, bricks falling down, no one works there. Guns and drugs all through the black community. Last year, 23 schools were closed in the city of Philadelphia while $600 million was earmarked for Phoenix 1 or 2, the two new prison complexes at Greaterford in Montgomery County right next to us. When you close schools and you build more prisons, you are sending a definite message to the black community because we are who fill the prisons. Make no doubt about that. So it is necessary for the new abolitionists, the new Underground Railroad, to organize against this system. Who are the new abolitionists? What is the new Underground Railroad? Look at your neighbor to the left. Look at your neighbor to the right. Those are the new abolitionists. In this church, several months ago, we came together for a mass incarceration teach-in. From that mass incarceration teach-in came the Coalition Against Mass Incarceration, which is called CAMI Philly, due to Marietta, she held out for that name. I said it should be called CAMI because it's gonna be a universal organization. Marietta says it starts right here. We're calling it CAMI Philly. I don't argue with Marietta. I've learned better than that. This coalition is going to be doing so many, many things in the city of Philadelphia. And you have a unique opportunity to be a part of this. We have chosen Strawberry Mansion as a pilot program and a area of the city that we are focusing on. I think that Kent said earlier that I'm in a master's degree program over at Temple University. This is how wonderfully God works. My semester class for this semester is practice of social delivery. In that class, we were tasked to assess a part of the city and figure out the problems in the city and then design solutions. So my team was tasked with North Central, and a part of that is Strawberry Mansion. So we've been gathering data, going out doing interviews. We have learned how to truly, in a sociological way, assess a section of the city and bring all the resources necessary in an imaginary way to that section to transform it. Well, it's not going to be an imaginary way. We're going to use the foundation of our research to support the work of CAMI Philly and move it forward. In the First Unitarian Church, we started a literacy program, and we've linked with the Center for Literacy, and we just trained 10 literacy tutors. And last week, we went to the halfway house at 8th and Callow Hill with six of those literacy tutors, and they're going to be tutoring returning citizens who are at a middle school level, who don't have enough reading skills to approach their GED tests. So they're going to be tutoring those men to assist them in reading. We have a program for children of incarcerated parents. There are so many children in the city whose parents are incarcerated. Christmas time, I can't tell you how many phone calls the Center for Returning Citizens got from women with children who were trying to put together some form of Christmas, and they said, "Mr. Terrell, my husband's serving 15 to 40 at Gradiford, or he's serving 40 to 60 at Camp Hill." And they were struggling just to create something memorable for the children. That sort of situation is duplicated all over the city. What we're trying to do with these children is give them mentors, give them after-school programs, give them a place where they can come, where people understand what they're going through. In 2009, I finished a 18-year sentence in the federal prison. All during that time, my family stepped up and provided parenting to my children. But that was a unique situation because my family is a very close-knit family, and I tried to be a remarkable father from behind bars. It is extremely difficult to parent from behind bars because you parent in 15-minute phone calls. You parent in day-long visits. You parent in countless letters. I wrote so many letters. When I came home, my kids literally had stacks of boxes of letters and cards that I had sent them over the years. I was very gratified that they had saved every one, but I was like, this is a lot of stuff. But that's the kind of effort that you have in order to stay connected with your children. And when I came home, my children were grown, I had grandchildren, and I had to devise a place for myself in the family structure that fit into their lives, because they had created lives without me. And this is a very important concept that we stress at the Center for Returning Citizens, because our mission is to help people come home from prison, find jobs, find houses, reconnect with their family and their community, and to atone for the things they have done wrong. One of our abiding principles is that if you sold drugs in your community, if you shot, if you murdered, if you robbed banks, whatever you did, you contributed to the destruction of society and the dissolution of your community. Atonement means far more than asking for forgiveness. The scriptures say faith without works is dead, so you have to put in work. One of the foundation stones of the work we do is you have to give back to the community. You have to give back to your family. You have to be a role model. You have to show your children that you are truly going to be at home. You know, one of the things one of my daughters asked is, can we believe you, Dad? Can we believe that you're never going to do anything again that's going to take you away from us? That's what they want to see. They want to see day-to-day parenting. They want to see you establishing a foundation of good work to move you into the future. All of these things are a part of the struggle for mass incarceration. Don't make the mistake of thinking that mass incarceration is simply people in prison. It's helping to attack the system that creates the conditions for people being in prison and for people returning to prison. We have a transitional house on Kensington Avenue, and the folks who live there are doing very well, but we have a problem with drug dealers who want to sell in front of our building. And I'm always going there, you know, asking them to just move down the block. You know, I'm not asking you, you know, to stop doing your business, because you're not going to do that, but move it away from what I'm trying to do here, which is positive. And most of the time they do, all right, Mr. Rella, moving. They come back, but that is what it is. But how much more powerful would it be if I could say to them, listen, you don't have to do this. You know, we have a job in this factory. We'll start you at $15 an hour with benefits. This is short-term money. That money is going to be long-term money. We have many different initiatives that we have before City Council for jobs, for programs. They may give it to us, and they may not. You know how politicians are. But how much more powerful would it be if I could walk into City Hall and say, listen, here's 20 sheets of paper. On these sheets of paper are 10,000 names of returning citizens in your councilmatic district. We would like to create this program, and we'd like you to fund it. We aren't threatening anybody. We're looking for supporters. If we get support, these are potential supporters of your being in office. If we don't get support, well, they may support the next candidate in office. So we're doing voter registration, voter education. My partner Anthony Dickinson and I go all over the city speaking to leaders of returning citizens. And there are many of them. There are many organizations. There are many guys who are leaders in their blocks, in their community, who have reached a point of consciousness, and they are ready to have a better life for themselves, their families, and the communities. And we are trying to link them up to first see the battle against mass incarceration. Because sometimes even people who have been through it don't see the enormity of it. They just see the little share of it. So our job is to bring consciousness first, to educate people, to let them know that this is the issue, this is the fight, and what can you do as an individual, as a church, as an organization that will enable you to have a share, so that when you are old and gray and your grandchildren are sitting on your knee, you can say, at this time, when this was going on, this is what we did. We were part of that movement that transformed that system. I mean, you don't know about it, grandson, because it doesn't exist in that form anymore. But it used to exist, and we're the people that changed it. That would be very, very powerful. As a congregation, as an individual, what can you do to be a part of the Underground Railroad? You are already doing it in a sense that you are here listening to the message. Understanding and absorbing and aligning yourself with the message is powerful. CAMI Philly is right here in your church. How powerful is that? This is going to be the vehicle that is going to move forward and be a national model for fighting against the system. You can write a check. You know, we're always in need of funds. We are doing so many things that need funding. You can volunteer. If you have skills, if you're an ex-teacher or just an educated person and you have time to mentor a young person, teach someone to read, work with us in developing programs. Last week at the Unitarian Church, I gave a similar sermon, and I got an email from a young lady named Phaedra Tender. She's a University of Penn student. She came to our office, and she laid out a whole mapping program, and mapping and statistics are the foundations of grant writing. We need to show how many folks we're helping, in what way, what the problem is, how what we are doing is going to affect that problem. She laid out a powerful program that would enable us to move forward in the battle of mass incarceration. She also came back on Saturday and gave me a wonderful tutorial in my research class that I was behind in, and I really thank God for that. So there are so many small things that we can do to move forward in the fight against mass incarceration. We spoke of Martin Luther King earlier, and he was indeed a wonderful leader, a dynamic presence, and he is remembered for being at the head of the civil rights movement. But the reality is, Martin Luther King was only a small part of the civil rights movement. Think of all those folks who sat at the counters, all those folks who marched, all those folks who were beaten in hosed, all those folks who spread the word on an individual basis and came together and said, we will not be second-class citizens. We demand our full rights as citizens. They were the true civil rights movement. In this time, in this day and age, let us be the foundation. Let us be the heart, as Daniel so wonderfully portrayed earlier, and the soul of the new civil rights issue, the new Underground Railroad. Thank you.